Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of The Tap. I am your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
We got a few things, actually. We have AEW Dynamite from this past Friday. And normally we would cover Impact Wrestling for their main show, but they also had a pay-per-view on this past weekend. So we're just going to be covering Against All Odds. And then we have NXT In Your House, their pay-per-view event that happened last night. But first, we're going to go ahead and jump straight into AEW. And this, I'm not going to lie, I was actually a little disappointed by this week's episode. It was very promo heavy.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, when I was watching the show, like, I was not excited about really anything in particular. I don't know. It just, I was more like down to watch AEW this week. Like, I was less into watching it this week than I normally am. So,
yeah, you know. I mean, it was a lot of just like BS. I mean, it's to build up other aspects of things. And especially when they have their bigger paper, not their bigger pay-per-view, but their bigger event coming up in a couple weeks, where it's not going to be on a Friday night. It's going to be on a Saturday night. And that's where Jungle Boy is supposed to be going for the AEW title. So I think that's kind of like trying to build up a little bit more for that, because it was very promo heavy, yes, and not enough matches. So really quick on the rundown, we had Christian Cage beating Angelico. We had Pac, Penta, and Eddie Kingston getting the win over Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler. We had Miro successfully defending the TNT title against Evil Uno. We had Lance Archer with, like, what was that, a minute and a half match against an enhancement talent. Name was, yeah, Chandler Hopkins.
Yeah.
You had Nyla Rose versus Layla Hirsch. And that one actually was given some time, but I think I just kind of like,
It wasn't just you. Wasn't the best.
No, and then your main event was Hangman Adam Page and number 10 of the Dark Order Preston Vance getting the win over Brian Cage and Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah.
So I mean they did still put on probably the equal number of matches that they usually do. I just feel like two of them, well, one of them was just really quick with the squash match for Lance Archer, and then the other one being the Nyla Rose Layla Hirsch match. I couldn't get into it. It was just very, it was like boring. It was just, and like, typical, there was nothing to it.
And typical of what they usually do with the women's matches is they put it on like in that little, I don't know, first quarter of the second hour, like kind of thing. And then they,
no, this was actually right before the, that one was actually right towards the end. That was right before.
I might be a little off where it was, but I feel like they still had, my point is still valid, because they still had a commercial break for like most of this match. This match was like Nyla Rose and Layla Hirsch was pretty decent. Like,
it was a decent match, but it was just boring.
Yeah, and also a lot of it went through like commercial break, like
picture in picture.
Yeah, which they do a lot for the women's matches.
Well, they do a lot for all their matches. Anytime they go to commercial while they're in the middle of a match.
Yeah, they've been doing it less lately, though. I feel like. But then also they stick the women's things together.
Because Britt Baker did her promo right after
that match. Yeah, and then the Britt Baker promo right after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was understandable, because especially considering they're going
into
about
Nyla Rose.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand.
So it was fitting for that. But they need to, they kind of need to do more. So it's just like, I understand your women's division is spread out between AEW Dark, AEW Dark Elevation, and Dynamite. But you shouldn't be just kind of reliant on whatever your main plot line is for the women's title being the only women's interaction for Dynamite. I mean, realistically, yes, you had Nyla Rose defeating Layla Hirsch, and then you had a Britt Baker promo, but I feel like you could have stuck another women's match earlier in the night, you could have done like Ty Conti fighting somebody. You could have done Red Velvet. Yeah. I mean, you had Jade Cargill doing a promo, but I'd rather, I don't want to see a Jade Cargill promo.
And that was
promo.
Basically Mark Sterling. The yeah. whole promo is basically Mark Sterling. Right.
I would rather have them come out, and I would rather actually see her do a squash match than see Lance Archer come out and do a squash match.
Well, I was going to say they could have had that instead of their Darby Allin and Sting promo. I could have really done without that.
Yeah, I mean, that was, and that was another thing that just kind of annoyed me, because it's just like, okay, you had this buildup of, you know, from last week. Oh, you know, Darby, you can choose any partner you wish other than Sting. And he's just like, I'm not going to go and choose another partner other than Sting, but I'm going to ask you to stay home. And I'm going to do this as a handicap match. I'm like, dude, you're just going to get your ass beat.
Yeah, well, of course. We know it's going to happen. I just didn't like the promo itself, because I don't like the way that Darby... I don't know. I don't like the way that they're...
He's coming across really horrible.
Yeah, I don't like the way that he comes across. Yeah, exactly. He just seems like, I don't know, all like the coolness and mystique about him is just gone when he's just talking to Sting, and he's like, yeah, you know, I respect you, bro. Like, I'm like, I just really didn't want to. I
no,
really
it's
would
it's bad
that promo
now.
Didn't happen. I'd really rather that promo didn't happen. But while we're on the subject, you know, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky also had a promo. Same
I feel
thing.
Like everyone had a promo.
Yeah, but they had a promo against, you know, Darby and Sting, and the one funny thing from that promo is I guess they came up with a name for themselves and a catchphrase.
I missed that part.
Oh, okay. Well, they're called the Men of the Year, I guess, is what their name is, because at the end of the promo, Ethan Page says it's only up from here for the Men of the Year. And then Scorpio Sky goes, wow, that's a great catchphrase. And then Ethan Page goes, yeah, I thought so. You know, so that's like their catchphrase. So I assume because that's their catchphrase, they would be calling themselves the Men of the Year.
Probably.
So that's what they're going with. It was kind of funny. Their promo was definitely better than Darby Allin and Sting's, but yeah,
it was still lacking. It was still lacking, though. That's the problem. Yeah. Like these promos. So I'm not gonna like get into every single promo, but you had a Matt Hardy promo to start the show, which was lacking. You had you had Cody Rhodes and Brock Anderson coming out, which is the son of Arn Anderson, coming out to do a promo and everything. And then you had what's his name, QT Marshall, come out and get involved and challenge Cody to a strap match in a couple weeks. And then he uses his belt to hit Arn Anderson with, and then Brock takes QT Marshall down. It wasn't a great promo from Cody, but it was decent to set up their match. Then you have Pinnacle's promo, which we're going to go into that in just a minute. You had the Darby and Sting promo. You had Evil Uno doing a video about Brody Lee. You had an Andrade video. You had Kenny Omega doing a promo, which brought out Jungle Boy. You had a Jade Cargill promo. You had a Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page promo. You had the Wingman promo, who I don't even know why they were even on Dynamite, because they are like they're nothing but jobbers. And then you had a Britt Baker promo. So it's just like you had a ton of promos, and most of them were just very lacking.
Yeah, and can I say like that what you said about the Andrade like video package thing, like it was just him getting dressed.
Yeah, it was lame.
It was literally just him getting dressed.
Yeah. Let's take a close look at Andrade El Idolo, and it's just like him getting dressed. I'm like, dude,
know it was him. I didn't even know it was him until like almost the end of like the whole thing, when I was like, oh yeah, that's got to be Andrade. Because they were like close up on like him putting on, like, you know, doing the cufflinks and the
yeah. Yeah. As soon as I was seeing like the white suit, I was just like, I knew exactly who it was. Yeah. Like with the white suit with the black pinstripes, I knew exactly who it was. All right, let's get into some of this a little bit more. So we're going to start with the TNT title, Miro versus Evil Uno. And this, here's the thing.
It was pretty good. I like Evil Uno, but go ahead.
I was actually going to say, here's the thing. So the video package that they did of Evil Uno kind of tributing for Brody Lee, I thought was actually good.
I thought it was good too.
This match where it was Miro dominating at first, and then finally you have Evil Uno getting that comeback, you know, and it made you kind of second guess for just a split second that, are they actually going to put the title on him? And then it's just like, there's no way that's going to happen. But the, like, a 1% chance like popped in your head at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when the Dark Order came out, the whole Dark Order comes out, including like Brody Lee Jr., the entire Dark Order. And it's like, yeah. And he's like beating up Miro. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Because I was like, no way. I was like, with all of them out here, I was like, maybe he's going to win.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, I actually, this was one of the better parts of Dynamite this week. I like this match. I'm actually a huge fan of Evil Uno. If a lot of people don't know, he actually has like a Twitch. So it's Colt Cabana. A lot of them do. They do like a lot of stuff outside of like AEW wrestling. And he still wears the mask and everything, of course. You know, he's still Evil Uno. He's awesome, and he's still that same character. Like who he is in real life is basically who he is as the Dark Order character.
Well, that's kind of like how Silver and Reynolds are, you know, way that they are. I mean, the way that they kind of goof around and stuff like that on BTE, that's how they are. Yeah.
They're all goofy jokesters, and they're literally the goofy faction that you can't help but like, you know.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. But it was the other part that I found, I mean, Rusev or Miro, whatever you want to call him, did get the win with the accolade, where it's like he calls it the game over. I always call it the accolade just because it sounds better. But he bends them all the way backwards, which is sick. But what I found hysterical was the referee calls the bell because Evil Uno taps, and Miro holds his head there with one hand, and he reaches back with his other hand and starts waving to -1.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I thought that was just priceless. I'm like, dude, I'm like, that is such like, that is like the heel thing to do that just gets you over that much more, man. Just like that little tiny thing of like, just, yeah, you know, pissing somebody off, like, especially if it's like a little kid, just like, dude, yes. That,
yeah, it's perfect heel heat. I love it.
I loved it. Yeah, it was great. Then we go into again, the main event match was Team Taz. It was Brian Cage and Powerhouse Hobbs taking on Hangman Adam Page and number 10 Preston Vance of the Dark Order. And I thought it was a decent match. It wasn't really one of my favorites.
Yeah. One thing I liked about this match though was which you don't really get into until like the end of the match, but the story of FTW sort of like, because they have this match, and towards the end of the match, Ricky Starks and Hook come out, and they basically, you know, Hook distracts the referee. Ricky Starks tries to give Cage the FTW title to hit 10 with, and he ends up throwing it out of the ring. And then Starks gets up on the apron and slaps Cage in the face. And then Cage chases after him and leaves the match and leaves Hobbs by himself. Yep. And that's how 10 and Paige, you know, were able to pick up the win. And that's what I liked about the match, is that I was actually interested in what they're doing with the breakup of Cage leaving FTW. That's the match itself was okay. I mean, it wasn't terrible or anything, but it wasn't like spectacular either.
Yeah. But I mean, here's the thing that I feel when it comes to, so I'm not going to go into the match itself, because I really don't, the match itself was okay. It wasn't really anything great. And I like the teasing of the breakup of Team Taz. I feel like it's the wrong person that would end up leaving it, though. I feel like Ricky Stark should be the one who ends up leaving it and not Brian Cage, because Brian Cage needs Taz as the as the mouthpiece. Ricky Starks is good on the microphone. He doesn't need Taz on the mic. The thing that annoys me even more, though, is you brought this title in well over a year ago, the FTW title. And I can give in, like, go into specifics when it comes to the FTW title. It's a novelty belt, essentially. Like,
it's less of a belt than the $1 million championship.
No, not really. Because here's the thing. So the $1 million championship was only really ever defended. I mean, it was defended a couple times technically, but it was only that there was only one ever title change with it. Well, two technically. It was $1 million man losing the title to Virgil and then him getting it back from Virgil. That was the only time that the title really ever changed hands in a match.
Don't forget about my favorite wrestler, the Ringmaster.
But he was, but he never lost the title to anybody.
That's technically a title change, though.
No, it wasn't. He was handed it. He was gifted.
But it's still, if you look at the history of the $1 million championship,
I understand.
He's the third championship.
But I'm talking about an actual match.
But FTW title, is your point that the FTW title has never been defended
in AEW? Yes. So yeah. Taz brought this when he was in ECW. Taz brought this out, and he was the real world champion because Shane Douglas was ducking him in the storyline. Shane Douglas was out on injury.
And there was a purpose for the title.
Right. There was a purpose for the FTW title. And Taz defended it as the World Heavyweight Championship. He kept like defending it against everyone. It wasn't a sanctioned title. It wasn't recognized, you know, essentially. But he kept on defending it. He did lose it to Sabu at one point and that before getting it back. But it was a defended title. And it was something that actually had some sort of meaning. I feel like with them bringing this in AEW, it was to like put that kind of same feel on Brian Cage, but it's never defended. And that's the thing that annoys me with this title, is don't keep on bringing this out onto TV because it means nothing now. Unless you actually start defending it against people, even if it's squash matches, who cares? Make it an FTW title match. Make it have some sort of worth. And then honestly have that as like the catalyst, like a thing that, you know, kind of goes after between Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. That would have been fine, but they really dropped the ball on this whole thing with the FTW title. And now it's completely meaningless at this point.
Well, for some reason, something that they keep harping on the fans about, because a lot of people like us are like, why aren't you doing anything with the FTW title? They're like, a few months ago, fans were like, really like, why aren't you doing anything with the FTW title and like the Bucks and, you know, Brian Cage and Taz were like, oh, you know, like, I hate that people keep asking, like, we're going to defend the FTW title. Like, they're like, don't worry about it. Stop asking, you know, like they're never going to do anything with it. So then what's the point of having it?
That's exactly my point. That's exactly the point that I'm making right now.
Also, the point is, I feel like, though, is they know that, though, is that because Brian Cage throws the title like it's basically worthless.
Because it is at this point. They've completely ruined the reputation of what the FTW title really stood for.
Yeah. Because F the world title.
Yes. All right. Next match, which was actually a really good match. I liked seeing it, was Pac, Penta, and Eddie Kingston taking on the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler.
Yeah.
I mean, I keep forgetting how good Cutler actually is in the ring, because he's always looked at as a stooge. And then before he was a stooge, he was a jobber.
Yeah, he was a dragon. He had a crap.
He had a horrible gimmick right from the beginning.
I prefer him as the stooge. I think he's really good in that role.
The stooge is fine. Yeah. I just, like, because of it, you forget how good he actually is in the ring as a competitor. No, he
surprises you for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, it was a really good match. And then, of course, you have at the end of it, you have the Good Brothers coming out with the Elite to kind of beat down everybody. And then you have Kazarian coming out to make the save.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So now you have Kazarian added into this whole mix of trying to, you know, basically a bigger combustible element against the Good Brothers and the Elite. That's going to just continue to grow, because, I mean, when Moxley does finally come back, you're going to have Moxley back into that fold. So you're going to have Moxley, Kingston, Pac, Penta, maybe Ray Phoenix, if he comes back from injury, whenever that is, and Kazarian. You have all these people, and it's just going to be like one big warfare that I'm just like, dude, there's too many people involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, even considering that Kenny Omega has his own feud with Jungle Boy right now, and you know that the Bucks and Good Brothers, you know, are, you know, getting involved in, you know, like in this match, you know, and
don't be surprised if you see, and I'll kind of get into it in a little bit. I won't be surprised if you see someone from Impact coming over soon because of what happened at their pay-per-view.
Exactly.
The one thing I will honestly say, there was actually one point in this match I thought it was really cool. So we all know that, you know, Penta loves hitting the destroyers.
Canadian destroyers, Mexican destroyers. Sorry.
Yeah. But this but this time it was probably like the most interesting version I've seen yet, which was
the way.
he goes for the wheelbarrow move. Like, you know how Rey Mysterio used to like do the wheelbarrow roll up type of thing? So he does that to do like the roll up. Comes out of it and then hits the destroyer. I forgot on who he hit it on, but he comes out of the wheelbarrow
on Matt Jackson. He does the wheelbarrow on Matt Jackson
and hits the destroyer on Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's how it was. But yeah, I was just like, dude, like that was pretty cool. Like it was a bit slow moving to hit, but I was just like, dude, that was still pretty cool.
For all of the destroyers that we've seen Pentagon Jr. do just in AEW alone. He always just finds a way to come up with a different way to set up a destroyer. So I love it.
Because he keeps it interesting, you know?
Yeah, he definitely does. I love watching Pentagon Jr. Everybody in this match was on point. This was probably I don't know, probably the best match of the night.
Oh, it definitely was the best match of the night. But just to kind of touch base when it comes to that whole the destroyer thing, I will say there was another destroyer, not on AEW, and I'm not going over the whole night of Impact Wrestling, but there was a match on Impact that there was like another crazy version of a destroyer. So they had Trey Miguel and Petey Williams taking on Chris Bay and Rohit, and Miguel and Petey get the win. Afterwards, Ace Austin and Madman Fulton attack them, right? Yep. Everyone ends up ganging up on Madman Fulton at one point after Ace Austin was like taken out. And they set it up like it was going to be like the Tower of Doom type of move. Yeah. And instead they had Petey get to the top rope and he hits the Canadian Destroyer off the top rope on Madman Fulton, and they called it the super ultimate Canadian Destroyer from the top rope.
That's awesome.
I like I said, I'm not going into Impact right now. But just seeing that, I was just like, dude, that was sick. Because I expected it to be a powerbomb. I expected it to be a powerbomb, and he actually hit it as the Destroyer. I was like, nice. That's
so awesome, because you always see Petey Williams, because, you know, look at the move. It looks devastating. It's his finisher for the longest time. And he, you know, always would take so long to set it up and really sell that once he hit that move that it was over. And now it's become more of like a transitional move in like multi-man matches and tag team matches stuff like that.
Because it's, you don't see people using it as their finisher as much anymore, because it's just kind of, no matter how you look at it, it's always going to be Petey Williams's move. He was the one who did it.
I like that he innovated it, what I'm saying, because he normally does it just regular, same way.
Yep.
Most of the time, and that's really cool that he did a super.
He changed it up a little bit. Yeah.
Super ultra Canadian Destroyer.
But it was really cool to see it. But you see now, like, all wrestlers wind up doing it just because it's like it was the in thing to do, and it's the same thing with Moxley when he was Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
Like when someone would hit him and then like he would fall into like the ropes and he'd like balance himself on that, like the middle rope for a second, come back and clothesline you. Like, dude, when he was Dean Ambrose, so many people on the indie circuit everywhere was like doing this. And I was getting super annoyed over it, because like, because it was just like almost every time you turn around, at least one or two matches on every single show that you watched had someone doing this, whether it was on TV or on the indies or something. And I'm like, can you do something other than like what is trendy?
Yeah. Nowadays I feel like there's so many people that can do all these crazy moves that, you know, you're gonna end up using other people's moves.
And of course.
Most of the time on indies, you're not really thinking that, you know, millions of people are going to see it or anything. You're figuring you're doing it for whoever the live crowd is. I know, I hate.
But they did it so horribly, though. That was the thing.
Yeah, I also don't like people using other people's moves that are like their signature or finishing moves that people know, like, that's that, like, it's known to be that person's move, and then everybody else is doing it.
The V triggers, that's been another thing that I've seen like lately. Everyone, like, I keep seeing people using the V trigger or some sort of modified version of a V trigger when it comes to their like their arsenal of moves. I'm like, dude, come on,
don't get me started on the Bucks doing it, because I hate them doing it, and it looks like they're softly patting you with their knees.
Oh, yeah.
Every time they do it, and I'm like, they just do the Meltzer driver. I love that. Just do that, please.
And that's the awesome thing. Like, that's really cool to see them do that. That's something that no one else does. That's something cool. I mean, hell, when I used to do the when I used to do wrestling and stuff like that, I loved doing the super kick, and it was before it was overly produced when it comes to doing super kicks like the Young Bucks do. You know, but I didn't like to do it as a finisher. I used it as like a setup. So it was like, for me, it was a super kick, spine buster, like the double A type of spine buster, and then a flying elbow drop. Like, that's the way I like to go. And that was my lead into for a finish. And even when I play video games, like that's what I still try to do. Like, because that's always been my thing. But I feel like when you look at pro wrestling right now, it's like people keep on trying to do the V trigger, keep on doing super kicks, keep on doing, you know, everyone's doing destroyers. Everyone's doing, it's just like, dude, come on. Like, there's so many moves out there to do that, like, are equally as good. And likewise, there's so many other things, like, get creative. I had come up with a submission hold a long time ago that people, I've actually seen wrestlers do now. Corey Graves actually had it when he was in NXT, and I had come up with a submission hold back in like 1999. That's how far back I went. And it was like a modified version of a figure four where the guy's laying on their stomach, you slap on the figure four and you're laying on your back. Yeah. And you actually grab the other ankle that's not being used in the, you know, you're not pressing down on for the figure four, and you put that in an ankle lock. So you really like have this guy locked in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this was really cool, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I would love to see people use this. And I've seen two people ever use this ever since. Corey Graves was one of them when he was in NXT before he got injured and yep. He went to announcing. And then the second person was TJP.
Yeah, TJP does some innovative stuff, especially now with his like submissions that he does. He always tries to wrap people up.
Yep. But I mean, that's something like get creative when it comes to submission holds or your grapples or a high fly move. Like Ember Moon's Eclipse, she took something that was the stunner and she made it hers by doing this top rope version of it. And it was cool. And it's still cool because she's still like she was hitting that on Raquel out of a powerbomb. That's cool. Yeah. That's something different and innovative. And that's what this business needs right now is they need people to step out of like doing the same old BS and into something more.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's get into the final piece of AEW Dynamite, which is Inner Circle and the Pinnacle.
I was gonna say I thought the Pinnacle had pretty good promos. Wardlow's was the weakest, but he's obviously promo. You know, but he accepted Jake Hager's MMA fight next week. They all the rest of them though had pretty good promos.
I thought the promo itself, like the overall promo itself, was pretty solid. I did like the Pinnacle, you know, every one of them is speaking, even though Wardlow is just kind of blah. The thing that I didn't like was how horribly they destroyed, like the Inner Circle destroyed the Pinnacle's limo.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this was just like horrible. Like, oh yeah, you know, good, you know, have fun walking home, and like they're bashing in the windows. I'm like, okay, first off, I'm like, you're bashing in windows, but windows aren't gonna do shit. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's not gonna stop them from walking home. It took them like, what was it, 3 minutes of like beating up this limo, and they're Jericho's using a baseball bat, an aluminum bat, on like the hood and the sides of like this limo, and it's not even making a dent. I'm like, dude, come on, like. You got to hit it with a sledgehammer if you want it to make any difference, but even still, it's not going to do anything.
And then they just come in with a forklift anyway. And destroy it.
Well, before that, you have, what was it? I think it was Ortiz.
Yes, this is my favorite part. Okay. So this, my two favorite parts of this is that while they're like all smashing up like the back and like the front of the car or whatever on the other side, Ortiz starts writing El Barto on the side of the limo, which I thought was so funny because he just finishes it and he tries so hard because like the can's running out of spray paint.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, and he's trying to get it, and you just get to see it before
I was actually talking about when he takes the spike and drives it into the one tire, and I'm like, okay, so you gave them one flat tire.
Oh, like, I thought you were talking about El Bardo.
No. I was talking about
the spike. I didn't even see him put the spike.
He did one spike really quick into it was the front passenger side tire. Mm-hmm. And like all they were doing at this point, this is before the forklift, was them just beating the car with like sledgehammers and baseball bats, and they just like they dented it a little bit and broke the glass. And I'm sitting there the entire time, and I'm like, "How are they?" I'm like,
"It's still drivable." The limo is,
I'm like, "It's still drivable." And then he like gives them one flat tire, and I'm like, "Dude, seriously, one flat tire?" I'm like, "That's it." And then finally, like at the very end, you have Hager coming in with a forklift and just destroyed like the sides of the limo, the one side. And I'm like, all right, are they going to flip this thing? I'm like, how are they going to flip this? Like, and they like, and you could tell that's what they were trying to do, and they couldn't do it.
Lifted it up. Well, because the thing is, this is the other thing that I liked about this actually is because, okay, for somebody who's driven a forklift before and is pretty proficient in forklifting, I like that Jake Hager must have been like, I know how to drive a forklift. Like, because I like that he was actually driving the forklift, because it's a lot harder than it looks. Especially he was driving like a big industrial one that's like, those are really hard to drive. That was another thing that I liked, is that it was actually Hager driving it, and it wasn't like a camera cut where he wasn't driving it. Like, yeah, you could see actually him lifting the limo, which I thought was cool. And then he drives them all away, like on
with them all end. Flipping them off.
Yeah, yeah, which is great. That was like one of the best parts for me, is that I respected the skill that he actually drove the forklift himself.
Absolutely. All right. So that ends AEW. We're going to touch really quick when it comes to Impact, when with their Against All Odds pay-per-view. So we're going to do a quick rundown on that. And then there's only a few real topics I wanted to cover with it. So here's the rundown from Against All Odds. We had Sami Callihan and Tommy Dreamer team up to take on the Good Brothers in a street fight and win. So Callihan gets the win on that one. Joe Doering gets the win over Kojima. That surprised me, because Kojima has only had one match so far in Impact. Yeah. W. Morrissey gets the win over Rich Swann. No surprise there. Tennille Dashwood gets the roll-up victory over Jordan Grace. And then afterwards, Jordan Grace kind of snaps and starts beating on Tennille.
Yeah.
Fire and Flavor keep the Knockouts tag team titles by beating Susan and Kimber Lee. Violent by Design keeps the Impact tag team titles when they defeated Decay. There was an X Division number one contender match that had, what was it? It was Trey Miguel, Petey Williams, Chris Bay, Rohit, and Austin, Ace Austin. And this ended in a no contest when Madman Fulton came out and basically destroyed everybody except for Ace Austin.
Yep.
Which, yet again, I'll get into that in a minute. That's going to be one of my pain points on this. Deonna Purrazzo keeps the Knockout Women's Championship when she defeated Rosemary. And then Kenny Omega gets the win over Moose, successfully defending the Impact title. This was due to the Young Bucks getting interfering, and then Sami Callihan shows up at the end, which we're going to go into in just a minute. But first, I got to speak on my gripe. I really hate when they have these like triple threat, fatal four-way, fatal five-way matches, and it ends in no contest. It's no disqualification.
Yeah, I know, right? I hate that.
I was so like pissed. I'm like, first off, this is a number one contendership for the X Division title. That's number one. Yeah. Number two, it's a fatal five-way match. There's no disqualifications, no countouts. Why does it end in a no contest?
Yeah,
that's no reason for it.
Exactly. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
So horrible.
Yeah, why have a match like that if it's going to end in a no contest? It literally moves nothing forward, and it doesn't help anybody.
No, it doesn't. It did nothing for anybody. I don't even know. It's just like it was a good match that you just ruined because for no reason. Like I'm sure that they have some sort of reason for this all. And I would not be surprised if it ends up somehow with Madman Fulton getting the X Division title match against Josh Alexander. Cause I mean, not for nothing. They've had big men, you know, tall guys, Abyss, they've had big guys, you know,
Abyss
they've
had them. Was their X Division champion. Samoa Joe was their X Division champion.
Well, I remember Samoa Joe. I don't remember Abyss being the X Division champion.
No, Abyss was X Division champion. He was.
What was that?
I don't know, mid-2000s somewhere, like 2007 or something like that. he won. He was in a I don't know, like one of their like ladder match or whatever. They had like a monster's ball. He was feuding with somebody like Samoa Joe or somebody like that, that he ended up winning the X Division title. And then that's when they started saying the X Division title. They were like, yeah, that's why it's the X Division. We don't, it's not just cruiserweights over here. You know, anybody can win the X Division title.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's the thing that I like about it. It's not just a cruiserweight, and it's not, I always kind of just associated it with as the Extreme Championship, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the, you know, anybody that's crazy enough can win this belt if they want to.
Exactly. All right. The only other real major thing from Impact's Against All Odds was the heavyweight title match, Kenny Omega and Moose. So this was done at Daly's place with no crowd. And this was meant to kind of keep the Good Brothers away from the match, but instead they have the Young Bucks interfere and now cause for Kenny Omega to get the win. After the match, Sami Callihan shows up and gets rid of the, you know, the Young Bucks. He makes it look like he's about to attack Kenny Omega. Don Callis comes over and says, think of your future. And Callahan attacks Kenny Omega with his baseball bat. And Don Callis then fires Sami Callihan, who is the number one contender now for the Impact title.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the one thing from actual Impact Wrestling, the show itself prior to Against All Odds, that was announced, was that the site location for the world title match was going to change to Daly's place. And then instead of it being a triple threat match, they were going to have Moose go one-on-one with Kenny Omega, and the winner was going to face Sami Callihan at Slammiversary.
Yeah. So I wasn't aware that Don Callis still had that kind of power in Impact. He's
an EVP.
Yeah, but I remembered recently his like contract was running out, and now he also has like an AEW contract, I believe now, and I think he's not actually as in charge as he was like when he was doing commentary with Josh Matthews. I think he has like a different kind of deal now.
Well, he's an on camera EVP for Impact Wrestling, and I think it's all because of
okay, so no, that makes sense. On camera makes,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he actually has.
Him and Scott D'Amore were basically running Impact for like the last couple of years, but now I think he's like stepping back to do so he can do more of this, invisible hand, you know, Impact EVP slash Kenny Omega's, you know, best friend, you know.
Yeah, thing. And I think that's why, more than anything, is why he's in this role on camera, was because of this whole thing with Kenny Omega.
Exactly. It just makes it easy to do.
I mean, Scott D'Amore has been on like the EVP role since, you know, he's been in this for a while now on camera as the EVP role.
For a few years at least.
Yeah. Well, I stopped watching for years, but I have only started watching.
Yeah, but for the last few years, he's definitely been in that sort of role.
Yeah. All right. That was it for Impact. We move on to NXT In Your House.
And let me just say real quick for this, did you notice, like, I didn't really notice because they do, WWE is really good with their graphics and stuff, but how much like how many words you actually have to say if you want to say the full name of this pay-per-view? You have to say WWE's NXT In Your House 2021. If you look on like for their graphic.
Yep.
I was like, wow, just to write this down, you know, for my notes for the show, I was like, wow, I can't believe this is like a whole sentence.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to any kind of advertising, you're paying per word on top of all that too. So
Yeah, right. You know,
It's just, it's ridiculous when it comes to some of this, but
it's quite
all
a
right.
mouthful.
Yep. All right. Let's go through the quick rundown really quick. All right. So first up, we had Xia Li getting the win over Mercedes Martinez. We had MSK and Bronson Reed successfully defending, against Legado del Fantasma. So in the all or nothing, MSK keep their tag team titles. Bronson keeps the North American title. We had LA Knight getting the win over Cameron Grimes and is now the $1 million champion. Raquel Gonzalez successfully defends the NXT Women's Championship against Ember Moon. And in the main event, we had a fatal five-way match for the NXT Heavyweight title with Karrion Kross getting the win over Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, and Kyle O'Reilly.
Yep.
So, I mean, our predictions were somewhat on point, I guess. Like, they...
Yeah.
I mean, we had it... We had some of them, right? I can't even find my match prediction one. I'm trying to look for like my notes, and I'm like, where did I put that? I'm trying to figure that one out really quick because
Oh,
here we go. Found it. All right. So we both picked Xia Li to get the win over Mercedes Martinez.
Yep.
Which there's no surprise there, really.
Especially because, you know, Xia Li, is in her new faction. What is it called?
Tian Sha.
Tian Sha. With the really scary ghost person, Mei Ling.
I don't understand that one.
But because it's like a spooky, I forget what they're called, like that thing from Scooby-Doo where they go to the the Chinese, like house where they do musicals and whatever. I assume something like that, like ancient Chinese, like demon or something like that they're kind of doing,
which
I don't really care for Mercedes Martinez. I think I've already said my piece on that on this podcast.
Yeah, but I think I want to see where this goes. And the only reason why I'm actually drawing the attention to this match was just because I want to. So Mercedes Martinez, I beats up Xia Li after the match. And then when she's going up the ramp, that's when she gets confronted by Mei Ying or Mei.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mei Ling.
Mei Ling. Yeah. And you know, she gets kind of grabbed by the throat, the same,
yeah, sort of like tossed around, like it's like,
yeah, it's the same thing that they were doing when it came to,
or something, like where it was like a supernatural, where it was like somehow this small person could pick up Mercedes Martinez by like the chin basically and throw her, like,
yeah, but this is what they were doing when it came to it was like Casey and what the heck is her partner's name? It was Casey Cantazaro and her partner.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Oh God.
That's
I
gonna drive me nuts.
Don't ask me.
Hold on. I can find out in 1 second. Because I actually do follow them both on TikTok.
So give me is it Caden Carter?
Yes, that's it. Caden Carter. And it was Caden Carter that they were doing that too, like where she was like grabbing her and she was like blowing the smoke into her face and everything. And I felt like that they were going to try to break up Caden and Casey.
Yeah.
But now doing that to Mercedes Martinez, I really won't be surprised if they somehow try to convert her into this whole thing. And I said it on the last show too. So.
Yeah, that's possible. It was interesting. I want to see where it goes.
Yep. So we're going to go ahead and kind of wait. We'll see what happens after Tuesday. Maybe even if they do or don't go ahead and even bring that on the show this week. All right. The all or nothing match. I picked Bronson Reed and MSK to win. You picked Legado to get the win.
Yeah. Even though I definitely knew that MSK and Bronson were going to win, I just really didn't want them to at all.
Well, again, I kind of feel like that this is going to be like they're going to continue the chase a little bit on this.
Yeah.
And I do feel like it's possible you may end up having Santos Escobar getting the North American title off of Bronson, but I don't, it was too soon.
Yeah, I did, however, enjoy this match, even though, you know, like I said, not the biggest fan of Bronson Reed. I don't really know what they're doing with MSK. And yeah, but Legado del Fantasma, Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde did some really crazy stuff in this match. You know, a lot of this match had a lot of flips all over the place.
But I feel like that would have been the better match to go with, would have been, and they probably will end up going straight tag team title match against them next time. But I feel like that would have been just the better route, would have been to have, MSK versus Legado at 2-on-2 instead of it being this all or nothing thing.
Yeah. I assume we'll probably at least get one more match out of each of the
titles between them.
Yeah, out of each of the respecting champions and challengers. So
yeah. All right. Next up, we both picked Raquel Gonzalez to get the win over Ember Moon.
Yep.
There was no surprise there.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
But it was okay.
Yeah. It was an okay match.
Nothing crazy. Shotzi came out to chase away Dakota Kai at the end of the match, but that really didn't even matter because Raquel still got the win anyway by herself.
Here's the thing is Raquel Gonzalez, she is a powerhouse and she is strong. She can do this, but they need to first figure out, is she heel or face? They need to go ahead and figure that out definitively, because when she feuded with Mercedes for that little bit of time, you couldn't tell which way she was. Yeah. Now, like, obviously in this feud with Ember, there was a clear cut. Ember's the face, Raquel's the heel. But now where do we go from here? Are we going with her still as a face? Are we going with her as a heel? Like, they need to really be definitive on the direction that they're going to go with her. And they need to really make her be the center point of the title, because right now every time they go to do a promo, it's Dakota who does the most of the talking, and maybe that's going to lead to them breaking up, maybe it won't, I don't know, but she needs to make her title reign a little bit more meaningful. First off, they need to have better quality matches, which this one was a good quality match, but they need to have her be the emphasis. She needs to be like putting that dot, like, you know, that exclamation mark on the match and the promos and everything. Like, she needs to do that.
Well, I think the thing is like, normally how NXT used to work prior to it being on like USA is that NXT is the place where you kind of figure yourself out, because she's obviously, you know, kind of green. They pushed her in to, you know, this big like main title picture after she like barely, and gave her the championship after she barely had any matches, you know, because she was mostly just the bodyguard for Dakota Kai until all of a sudden, like right before they put the title on her, they were like, yeah, Raquel is going for the title. Like,
well, you know, it was the feud between her and Rhea Ripley was what was getting her pushed, because when it was what the heck was her name? Dakota's former partner.
Tegan Nox.
Tegan Nox. Before she went out on that injury, I mean, that was Dakota's ride or die, was, you know, Tegan.
Yeah.
And then she turned on her, and Tegan came back eventually. Tegan gets injured again and just completely screwed up that whole program. And Raquel was getting involved in that. Then it became like this whole war games preview type of thing, and with Shotzi's team, and Rhea's getting involved in it. You had Raquel getting involved in it. You had And it was just like, that was the combustible elements of it all. And it's just like, okay, great. They're going to keep feuding. They're going to keep going. And that's what built up Raquel, but she hasn't have anyone at the caliber of Rhea Ripley, power and charisma wise, to hold the feud.
Yeah.
And that's what they need. They need someone with the power and the charisma to make it a believable feud. Otherwise, yeah. I'm going to look at it as Raquel's just going to squash her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
All right. So the other one that we differed on was the $1 million title ladder match. You picked Cameron Grimes to the moon. And I went with LA Knight.
Oh, did you actually write that down? You wrote because I said to the moon.
No, but it's just, I know that's his catchphrase. So
yeah. Oh no, but I said it too when I picked him, taking it to the moon. Yeah, I do agree though that he's definitely better, and they will definitely have an easier time telling a story where we can get behind him with him in the chase for the title.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I think that's where it's at, which is why, you know, he didn't win it right off the bat, because they're trying to extend this feud out so that eventually, I'm hoping that, you know, I would have to think that Cameron Grimes is eventually going to win that title from LA Knight. It's got to be.
Let's hope. But here's the one question that I have then when it comes to this is, and it goes back again with the FTW title that we were discussing about before.
Yeah.
Where are we when it comes to all this? Like, is this title going to still be in play, and is it going to be something that gets defended, or is this just going to be a novelty belt where he's just going to wear it out to the ring, and like in a month or so, it's just going to be dropped, forgotten, put back into storage?
Well, see, I think you're half right with both points, because I think they're going to do a little bit of both. Because I think it's basically going to be defended over a Cameron Grimes LA Knight feud. And then it's eventually going to go away in like a month or two after that feud has subsided eventually. Or either that, or, you know, if once Cameron Grimes wins it, he's basically, that's just going to be his novelty come out to the ring thing. And then maybe he'll eventually get it stolen from him or lose it to somebody, and that'll be what takes it off TV or whatever. So that's what I think is probably going to happen, is that they are going to feud over it. LA Knight's going to have to defend it against Cameron Grimes. He's going to convince him to somehow defend it against him. And then if he actually wins it, then I think it's going to go away somehow after that, you know, after Cameron Grimes is, I don't know, popularity has kind of worn off on the $1 million championship, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with it. I like the idea of bringing the title in, but not if it's just for the sake of this. Because yeah. I feel like it was the same thing when it came to the $1 million title for the Ringmaster. They did this with the Ringmaster to put it on him, to kind of give him some sort of prestige, which it didn't really work. And then
Don't compare this to the Ringmaster though.
I'm not trying to compare it directly to the Ringmaster. I'm talking about in terms of like the belt itself, like being
used. Like the importance of it. Yeah. And
then he defended it against Savio Vega. And then it was like, I know DiBiase's contract ended up coming up with WWE and they let DiBiase go. They continued this feud between Austin and Savio Vega with no $1 million title in sight. And it's just kind of like, I hate when they just get rid of the belt for no reason. Like it just fades to obscurity. If you wind up saying like the way you portrayed it, and it actually, yeah. I can see something like this happening where it's Cameron Grimes ends up stealing the belt and then like pawns it or something, you know?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Or like somebody like takes it from him and then like you never hear about it again.
Right, like, you know. Do something honestly, and this would this is very far stretching, and you will never see this happen, but just for my own warped sense of mentality, that I wanted to say this. What if R-Truth shows up with the 24/7 title, pins one of them, and out of confusion, he takes the $1 million title and runs off with it.
Oh my God. No. You know what I think, actually, you brought up a point that I'm not positive on this, but I'm a good over 50% sure that Ted DiBiase, I feel like Ted DiBiase, the original $1 million title, the reason why the $1 million title just was gone from the Ringmaster Savio Vega feud when he left is because I'm pretty sure it's actually his. Like, I think he actually purchased it.
I don't remember if he actually purchased it or if the WWE purchased it and they had given it to him. I don't really remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah, he might
but
have
I know it's,
taken it or something.
But I know the real version of it is in the WWE vault. They have it. So
yeah, well, because I think this $1 million championship, I don't know, today they might actually just make another one, but I was thinking that, well, the way they portray it off is like Ted DiBiase just had this in a case at his house, you know,
yeah,
and basically,
of course.
But that's kind of the way, he definitely does have a replica one that's like as legitimate as the real one.
Yeah.
Like, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually his belt. It, especially back in the 90s when he left, because back then they usually only had one copy of a championship, you know.
Well, I mean, that was a lot of money back then too.
Yeah exactly. Especially for that title. So
oh, yeah. All right, last match of the card, we had Karrion Kross getting the win over Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, and Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah.
This one we both got wrong because we both picked Gargano and Kross was the surprising winner.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't super surprising, considering how they booked Kross, but
I'm a little bit surprised. And again, the main reason why I went with Gargano was because of hearing of these NXT call-ups and the NXT UK call-ups. Figuring they would probably go with Cole and Karrion Kross to go and bring up. Apparently that's not going to happen. I guess I don't really know what is going to be. At least not yet, but we'll see what happens.
I was not like, I don't know. I wasn't particularly excited necessarily about this match. I mean, even though they have all the elements to be an exciting match, and then Karrion Kross went through the front door and I was like, all right, I'm in this match now I'm interested in what happens. So you know, for NXT in your house, for people that don't know, even since back when they originally did it, they always have like a house set up or like somebody's front porch or something like that with a door. And like sometimes people will come out of the door or whatever, you know. They had Todd Pettengill all over the show for what reason, I don't know.
Because he was always the host of In Your House.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, what did he add to the show was my thing on it. But but this match was actually, after it got going, like after that point when Kross gets thrown through the door, this match like really picked up. And like everybody was just annihilating each other. At one point, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole, they look at each other and Kross is on the apron after like everybody had basically hit him with something. And they look at each other and they powerbomb him onto the table together. And it doesn't even break. And it just looks so much worse. It looks so brutal, much more brutal than the table breaking. Because I feel like that hurts so much more when the table doesn't give. And he just like laid across it, and they just literally every time Kross tried to get into this match, he'd like destroy everybody for a minute. Then everybody would gang up on him and like either like, you know, throw him through a door or put him through the announce table or whatever and take him out for half the match. And then it was just the four smaller guys just, God, flipping off every rope and kicking every head that was in sight. I did enjoy this match. It really got me like I got hyped partway through this match because I had no idea what was gonna happen at a point. So
yeah, it was a crazy match. I like at the end how it was, because it's just like I forget who had it. I had the submission on, but I think it was Kyle O'Reilly had the submission on.
Kyle O'Reilly had the submission on Adam Cole.
On Adam Cole. And then Karrion Kross just like chokes him out. It was just great.
He had some weird thing kind of similar to the move that you were describing before, but he just kind of like twisted his legs up and like had him in like an ankle lock. It obviously was slightly different, but it was his own whatever, like how you were saying people should come up with different moves. He mm-hmm. was doing, you know, something that I had never really seen before, and sort of still twisted him out where Cole sort of looked like he was in a figure four. And it was really cool. And then Cross, puts on the cross jacket, choke on O'Reilly, and you're like, oh crap, you know, like, cause it's like in a moment where like, you're like, oh, who's gonna, is O'Reilly gonna go out first, or is Cole gonna tap first? And, Cole ends up, you know, he doesn't even get out of it. O'Reilly just lets go because he's like being choked out. And that's how Cross wins. But many times in this match, he had everybody in a cross jacket choke almost at some point. I think he did. He had every single person at a point in the cross jacket choke, and they all basically broke out of it, or somebody hit him from behind while they were in it, or broke it up. But I really like this match. I don't mind Cross winning it. I just really wanted Gargano to win. I have no idea exactly where they're going now because of the way the match kind of ended.
And well, and that's also one of the things that drives me nuts is when you have like the, it would have made sense if you had Gargano get the win, or if you had, you know, anyone really get the win other than Karrion Kross. But we, having Cross defeat four of the number one contenders, like the four top contenders, the four people who really are in the main event picture in one match, it just kind of makes it now, well, who's left?
I think he's going to feud with Cole on his own now, because Cole is going to have the gripe that he didn't like tap out or whatever. He's going to claim some BS, like he didn't beat him, you know. And I feel like that's the next feud is like a singles Karrion Kross and Adam Cole probably. And then because I don't know, they could do something with Gargano as well. They could go in that direction. One thing I do know is it's not going to be Kyle O'Reilly and it's not going to be Pete Dunne. That's one thing I'm pretty sure of.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. And that's, like you said, that's the problem.
Yep. That's the problem that we're having right now.
Yeah.
All right. That ends our show for today. We're going to be back tomorrow with Raw and SmackDown.
Yay.
Yeah. Well, considering I already watched SmackDown this week and, leaves little really to go on about. So we'll see how everything goes tomorrow after tomorrow's episode. Stay tuned. Find out more from us. Again, I'm author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. Join us tomorrow and find out what's on tap.